Hello, everyone. Peter Bristadt here, and welcome back to Just a Volleyball Guy podcast. In this episode, I'm going to talk about the rules that might be a bit confusing for those who are just starting to watch or play volleyball. So it might be helpful for U11 and U12 parents and players. So let's talk about youth volleyball. In the US, volleyball for the young athlete mainly happens in two different environments, school or club. Today, we're going to talk about some of the apparently confusing rules of club volleyball. In club volleyball, a team will be the winner of a match when they win 2 out of 3 sets. The first 2 sets go to 25 points, and in the case of a third set being necessary, it goes to 15. It is important to remember that the rule says that for a team to win a set, there must be a minimum difference of 2 points in each set. Speaking of set, let's make clear the nomenclature here. A match or a game in volleyball is the full match, the whole event, the whole best of three. And each part of that match is called a set. It's different from tennis, where each set is divided in games, not in volleyball. In volleyball, a best of three sets make a full match or a game. Now, I am not going to discuss here how to score a point, when a team scores a point, etc. But I am going to focus on what I think parents and spectators, and even players who are new to the sport, get more confused at. First is the roster. A team roster must have a minimum of 6 players, and the max number on the roster is defined by each tournament. Usually, tournaments allow at least 12 players in the roster. Some allow more, some don't. In your roster, you do not have to name the players by their position. The coaching staff does it in the beginning of each set in a little piece of paper called lineup sheet, where the player who is going to be playing as a libero is listed and the initial position of the 6 starting players. A team is allowed to nominate up to 2 liberos per set, but it is not mandatory to have a libero in your team. However, if a team names 2 liberos in the first set, they must play with 2 liberos for the entire match. And the same if the team names only 1 libero. They must have only 1 libero for the entire match. A team is allowed to change the player that is going to play as a libero from 1 set to the next, as long as the player keeps their original number and changes their jersey to one in a contrasting color with the regular players. And since we're talking about the libero, here are some cool things about this position. The libero is allowed to serve for 1 of the 6 positions. But what do I mean when I say to serve for 1 of the positions? It means that if the libero serves for player number 6, for example, and then that player is subbed out by player number 8, the libero can still serve for number 8 because numbers 6 and 8 are playing in the same position. Now, to note here, that rule is only in the US. Internationally, the libero is not allowed to serve ever. Now, let me ask you a question that always creates confusion. Can the libero set the ball, the second contact, by using their hands in an overhead pass, also called a set, inside the 10-foot line? Is it a fault? Yes. The libero is allowed to use their hands to set inside the 10-foot line, and no, it is not a fault, period. However, an eventual fault might be called in the next action, the next contact. If the libero uses their hands or sets a ball inside the 10-foot line, and in the next contact, the ball is sent over the net, that contact must happen below the top of the tape. It has nothing to do with the hitter not being allowed to jump. It always comes to the point of contact with the ball. Coaches usually tell their hitter not to jump to make sure that the contact of sending the ball over the net happens below the tape. However, if a player is super tall but doesn't jump, it doesn't matter. If the contact happens above the tape when sending the ball over, whatever is the fundamental used, it is a violation. The same way, if a short player jumps and swings that ball over the net, if the contact happens below the tape, it's not a fault, whether that short player jumps or not. Well, nowadays, players are well aware of this rule, but what happens sometimes is, for example, the libero passing a free ball inside the 10-foot line with their hands to the setter, who is front row, and that setter dumps the ball over. That is a fault, a violation, because the libero set a ball for a setter attack. You see, it doesn't matter if the libero contacts the ball on the first or second contact, the following player is not allowed to send the ball over the net by making contact above the tape. The same way, the libero themselves are never allowed to send the ball over the net during a play by making contact above the tape, ever. It is a bit confusing, but with some practice, everyone can understand this rule. Now let's talk substitutions. In club volleyball, each team is allowed 12 substitutions per set. The libero swaps do not count as substitutions. And there is a person at the table who controls the libero swaps and for which position the libero is serving, if the libero is serving. On the score sheet, only substitutions between regular players are noted. Say, player A starts a match and player B goes in for player A. That is one substitution. Then, player C goes in for player B. That's two substitutions. Now, both players A and B can only go back in for player C in that same position for the remainder of that set. In addition, neither of those three players can go in for, say, player D, who is a starter in another position. It is a tricky puzzle for coaches, but that is how it works. Here's an interesting note. The rest of the world plays by the FIVB international rules, regardless of the level or age group, which means that each team has only 6 substitutions per set. And moreover, if player B goes in for player A in a given set, only player A can go back in for player B. And once player A goes back in that same set for player B, player A is not allowed to leave the court, and player B is not allowed to go back in for the rest of that set. That is the actual rule of the sport. This rule, as is internationally made, forces all players to play all around a lot more than here in the US, whether it is at the club level or in the collegiate level, where, by the way, each team has 15 substitutions per set. I'm not discussing today which rule is better for the development of the young player. You can come to your own conclusions. I will just say that both ways of playing have advantages and disadvantages. Okay, fine. Here's my take on this. 12 substitutions per set allow more players to participate in the game. Yes, that is great. It gives a lot of people opportunities to play. But by doing it, a team may have players that are experts in playing only front row and defensive specialists who are experts to play only back row. Is that bad? Well, for the collegiate level, adult, pro, and international level, I don't believe so. In fact, That could make the sport even more attractive, more fascinating. It's great for the show. But honestly, it is beyond contemptible for the development of the player while they are still learning the sport. Having a defensive specialist play back row for a tall player when they are both still developing should not be allowed at all. How come? Why? When we have a defensive specialist play back row for a front row player, we are stealing the competitive back row fundamentals and reps off that front row player. In the long run, whether those two players become pro, collegiate players, Olympians, or not, it doesn't matter. They will only be able to play volleyball, one in the front row and one in the back row. Come on, that's not fun at all. Maybe, here's what I think. The substitution rule could go under a progression. Maybe per age group. Say, 6 substitutions for U11 and U12. 8 for U13 and 14. 10 for U15 and 16. And maybe from U17 on, all 12 subs. I think another way to develop players that are well-rounded would be maybe to limit the players that can be substituted from one set to the next. For instance, if a player plays one set and never gets off the court, maybe they shouldn't be allowed to play the next set. You see, there are several ways of making the young players play all around. And again, I am talking about developmental volleyball here, youth volleyball. I'm not talking about collegiate or adult, or pro, or the Olympic level volleyball. Now, let's go back to our set of rules. Let's talk about ball handling. This one is fine. Each team is allowed up to 3 contacts to send the ball over the net. Nothing new here. However, a carry or a lift is never allowed, and that is up to the up ref and the up ref only. That is a completely subjective rule. Say, if a setter holds the ball for too long in their hands, the up ref might call a carry or a catch. A catch is the official name of the fault. Catch. If a player passes the ball and the ball rolls over their arms, or any part of their body for that matter, the up ref might call a catch. It is always the up ref call. What about doubles? Doubles are formally known as double contact and are not allowed neither on the second or the third contact. But double contacts are allowed on the first contact. So a hard-driven serve or attack can be followed by double contact, as long as it is not intentional and it happens simultaneously. What? How so? Picture this. Imagine 2 players positioned for defense. The ball hits both players on the legs, 1 leg each, at the same time. That is a double contact that should be allowed. But say the same ball hits player A and then player B in 2 clearly separate contacts. That will count as 2 touches, not a double contact, but as 2 touches. And the next contact must be the one when the ball is sent over the net. The rule does not say anything about calling double contact fault because the ball spins out of a set. Some refs might take that as a sign of a double contact, but the fact is that if a setter, or anybody for that matter, contacts the ball with both hands at the same time, and it is a quote-unquote clean contact, it is not to be considered double contact. This is an even more subjective rule than the catch rule, and each referee sets their own standard each match. Some referees will be very strict. Some referees will be loose in calling this violation. In fact, the higher the level, the more the referees will oversee the double contact rule for the sake of the show. Now, the next one could be very confusing. How come players are all in different positions before the serve happens? And as the server contacts the ball, they all move and change positions for the rest of the rally. Well, we all know that as a player gets older, they start to specialize their position. Setter, middle, outside, right side or opposite, libero, and defensive specialist or DS. Well, once a player is specialized, they will play in particular places of the court. Usually, the outside will play on the left side when they are front row. The middles will play in the middle. The right sides are opposites will play on the right, and so on. However, the players must be in their position according to the rotation rule. The rotation rule names each of the six positions of the court. Position 1 is the player in the right back. Position 2 is the player in the right front. Position 3, middle front. Position 4, left front. Position 5, left back. And position 6, middle back. You see, the name of the position, or better, the number of the position, is in the opposite direction the players rotate. Players rotate clockwise, and positions are numbered counterclockwise. And why is that? Well, it is actually pretty simple. Position 1 is the first player serving. Position 2 is the second player serving. Position 3 the third, and so on. The rotation rule also establishes where each player must be in at the moment of the serve contact. Position 1 must be on the left, or better said, must be on the right of position 6 and farther off the net than position 2. Position 2 must be in front of position 1 and on the right of position 3. Position 3 must be between positions 2 and 4 and in front of 6. 4 must be on the left of 3 and in front of 5. Position 5 behind 4 and on the left of 6. And finally, 6 must be between 1 and 5 and behind 3. If any player is out of those positions, if two players are overlapped, the refs will call an out-of-rotation violation and the point will be given to the opponent. On the receiving team, it's up to the down ref to look the players' positions, and for that they will be looking at their feet. And for the serving team, the up ref will make that call. The same works for the serving team, by the way. But how come the receiving team changes their position a lot more than the serving team? Well, teams will position their players in the best possible way so each player within their specialized position is as ready as possible to attack where they like to attack in their position. Now, here the possibilities are endless, and I'm not going to get in that rabbit hole. Not today. The serving team has more than enough time to switch their positions for blocking and for defense, but that can only happen also after the serve. Now, the pursuit rule. We don't see that much. We don't see that often, but it is a thing. The pursuit rule. First of all, what is a pursuit? A pursuit is a save that happens on the side of the opponent. Huh? Well, picture this. The opponent swings a very hard ball into our defense. Our defense digs that ball up. But that ball goes to the opponent's side past the center line. Is our team allowed to recover that ball? The answer is yes. As long as the first contact, that defense, resulted in the ball going to the opponent's side outside the antennas. In that case, a pursuit is allowed, and the second contact must return the ball to our side, also outside the antennas, so that on the third contact, we send it over inside the antennas. Important, the player that goes in pursuit is not allowed to step inside the opponent's court. Otherwise, a foot fault can be called. At the same time, the opponent is not allowed to block the player in pursuit. They cannot step in front of them while they're running, but because by doing so, they will be making a violation. Again, remember, this is club volleyball. We're not talking about school volleyball. Still talking about chasing balls, a player chasing a ball that is going out of bounds, deflected out of the block or deflected out of the defense, for example, and that ball is going out of bounds. That player who is chasing that ball must have at least one of their feet in contact with the floor of the playing area. You are not allowed to chase a ball outside the limit established by the court tiles. Wherever the tiles end, that's the end of the playing area. Now, next we have some somewhat curious rules. One, and here it goes. You are allowed to use any part of your body to contact the ball, including your feet. As long as you don't make doubles on the second or third contact and you never catch the ball. Two, you are not allowed to return the ball on the first contact after a serve while the ball is still above the level of the tape. This means that you are not allowed to block the serve, but back in the day that was a thing. You could block the serve, but not anymore. But also, you are not allowed to say, jump to receive the serve with your hands overhead and return that ball over with your hands if that contact happens above the tape. You see, it is very unlikely this will ever happen, but if it does, you know it is a fault. It is a violation. Number three, foot fault in the center line. This is very controversial. A player is allowed to step over the line if that does not interfere with the play or the safety of the opponent. And that's the tricky part. Even though the rule says you are not allowed to step over the center line during the rally. Again, it is a subjective rule. It's up to the refs as what it is and what is not to interfere with the play. Number four, foot fault on the 10-foot line. First of all, let's make it clear. Officially, the volleyball court is measured in the metric system. So the 10-foot line is actually a 3-meter line. 10 feet is actually 3 meters and 4.8 centimeters. And that is actually almost 2 inches bigger than the official size. So people, if your court is 30 by 60 feet, you are playing in a court much bigger than what is supposed to be, than what it actually should be. Well, but for the sake of what most of us is used to, let's call the attack line the 10-foot line. This line divides each half court in attack zone and defense zone, or front row and back row. And that separation is important when a team is sending the ball over, whether it is in the first, second, or third contacts. It is also important to know, and not many people know this, a referee always looks at the height a contact is made with the ball when it's being sent over, or at least they should be looking at that. If that contact is above the tape or below the tape, and for that matter, if the ball is at the same height of the tape, that is considered below it. A player can only send the ball over by contacting the ball higher than the tape inside the attack zone if they are in the front row positions, positions 4, 3, or 2, if they are a front row player. If they are back row in positions 1, 6, and 5, they can only send the ball over by contacting it above the tape if their last contact with the ground before they take off, before they jump, is made behind the 10-foot line, still in the defense zone. Now, this goes back when we talked about the libero setting a ball in the attack zone. When that happens, it doesn't matter who sends the ball over, a front row or a back row player. If a libero uses their hands to set a ball and the libero is inside the 10-foot line, in the next contact, the ball must be contacted below the tape for that play to be legal. Now you can understand why some setter dumps are legal and some aren't. It all comes to, one, which position is the setter in that rally, if front row or back row, and two, the height of the contact the setter makes when they send the ball over. If the setter is front row, they can send the ball over at any height. But if they're back row, if their feet made contact with the ground in the attack zone before they dump, that contact must have been made below the tape. If it happens above the tape, that is a violation. If a back row player steps on the line and then jumps to hit a ball over the net, they're telling everybody that they're a front row player. So now you can understand. If the contact is made above the tape and the player stepped on the line or inside the attack zone before they take off, they become a front row player. And that is a violation of the rule. It is somewhat confusing, but if you watch volleyball a lot, you will understand this pretty quick. Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode about confusing rules. I know it might be confusing for the beginner parent, for the beginner player, or for anybody who's just starting to watch and enjoy the great sport of volleyball. See you guys in the next one. Cheers.